Ha ha! I'm back!
Hello, hello!
Hello! I'm Jessica Benoist-Young.
And I'm Melanie Reeve.
And this is Best Line.
Worst Line.
Where we pick a movie, pick a best line, pick a worst line. It's in the
name.
And
talk about it a bit.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah, we talk about it. Talk about the movie. We have a lot to talk about this
week. We've been talking for an hour already with our guest. We clearly have a lot to talk about.
You know what? Which all this time we've been talking and... Oh, I didn't get a bio for our guest.
Not needed.
No, totally needed.
Totally needed.
You'll send it to me.
Yes.
I'll do it in post.
Perfect. Sounds great.
Yes. Our guest wanted to do this movie. We think it's a great movie for Earth Day. And this is just like, you know, this is a huge nostalgia movie, I think, for a lot of people my age. And we'll be talking about Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest, which I didn't realize there were no more rainforests.
I didn't realize that was the full title until recently.
Yeah. our guest is a fantastic performer. Please welcome our dear friend, Sarah Hoffenberg. Do you go by Hoffenberg?
Yeah, Sarah Joelle Hoffenberg.
Okay.
You can do all three names.
Sarah Joelle Hoffenberg. It's very professional.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime you have three names, you're like, oh, you're like a serious performer. Like, yeah, that's...
Melanie, you gotta add one in.
Oh, gosh.
Because I'm doing
Melanie
the hyphen.
Rachel Reif. Yeah, that's true. You're Jessica Benoist-Young.
Yeah.
Melanie Rachel Reif, like, it works. I mean, that is my full legal name.
Uh-huh.
We could.
I like it.
Okay.
I like it, too. And I think it's funny because you two have known me so long that you know the Hoffenberg. But a lot of people...
Yeah. Like, a lot of people are like...
Because I dropped the Hoffenberg a lot, which is... Uh-huh. I mean, I still use it. It's my full name. Right. And professionally, in my work life, I still use it. But it's so great figuring out people who... Yeah, you guys just knew me as Sarah Hoffenberg. Like, back in the day, that was me. I love it.
Let's talk a little bit about this movie choice. So you said you had been going back and watching a lot of the animated movies from when we were kids. Mm-hmm. Tell me like some of the other movies that you watched and then what stuck out about Fern Gully for you.
I think it started during COVID when I was so overwhelmed with the world and the state state of the planet that I think I mentally needed to check out. So I just started watching old movies, particularly kids movies, like before bed, just so I could relax and just go to bed. And it kicked that nostalgia, like you said. And I recently watched Fern Gully, and I hadn't seen it for many, many years. I remember as a kid, it made a huge impact on me. I loved fairies. Yeah. I loved, you know, all the environmental stuff. But then I rewatched it as an adult during the whole thing, and I was like, wow, this movie actually has so many more points in it than I realized.
So going back and rewatching it's so profound.
It really is profound.
It was so ahead of its time too, and I almost wonder if that's why it was maybe a little bit more palatable to the adults who were taking their children to it, because all I can think of is like, if this movie came out now, if they redid this movie or a movie similar to it came out now, there would be a portion of the population of parents who would be like, I don't want to be preached to about the environment and blah, blah, blah. But I almost feel like since this movie came out, like before Al Gore and Inconvenient Truth and really climate change becoming like such a daily phrase that we have to talk about
and live through,
if it kind of if it kind of like just went a little under the radar while still being able, like not under the radar, it was able to give this message very blatantly, but without anybody feeling like, don't preach to me about this, you know, because nobody was preaching about this really yet. It was, it was this nice thing that we all got to participate in, you know. It was like, if you're an environmentalist or you're saving rainforests or you're helping endangered species or whatever, like that's a nice thing. And now it's like so far beyond that.
I also remember like in elementary school, like we would have like save the rainforest stuff. Like,
oh yeah.
We would like, that was something that we had, and it was just, you know, I didn't think anything, like I didn't think much of it. It was like, oh yeah, I'll save the rainforest.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was much more of a, I don't want to say, like, it wasn't as much of a quote-unquote hot-button topic, right. I would say.
Right.
I mean, I didn't feel like it was, but I was also a kid, so I don't know. But I know that there, when you do go back and read this about it a little bit, like, there was a, like, I was pretty little. But they, it did have a little bit of that, but it didn't have quite, like, the outrage that it would have today,
right?
You know, like I think there was a little pushback, but I don't think they really cared that much. It kind of, like you said, it kind of flew under the radar enough where they're like, eh, it's fine. And Robin Williams was in it, like it had entertainment,
right?
You know?
I mean, Robin Williams, Tim Curry, the cast is
Tim Curry. Yeah. Stop,
Robin Williams, Tim Curry. I mean, this was Robin Williams' first animated role.
Yeah, this is, I think, the first movie I remember, like, sitting in the theater and recognizing voices. Like being like, that is Rooster from Annie, like as soon as Hexus talks in his normal Tim Curry voice. And then like recognizing, oh, that's Robin Williams, like, because we used to watch Mork and Mindy on Nick at Night when I was a kid. I was like, oh, that's Robin Williams. And I probably would have seen Robin Williams and other stuff at that point. I don't know. But maybe. Like,
this was before he did Genie.
Yeah, I think that was the beginning of like me.
It was before.
Right. It was before he did Genie, but I know I had seen him in at least Mork and Mindy, if not other something else. I don't know.
You were more aware because I did not get any of the voices as a kid.
He had done Popeye before this.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Also, he did do Popeye.
Like, look at who you're talking to, Sarah. Like, Of course, she started recognizing.
We're talking like I was talking to somebody about this the other day too. Like, my mom was IMDb before IMDb was IMDb.
Same with mine.
Yeah,
like,
oh yeah,
she just knew that. And then if she didn't know it, we had books. We had like the Encyclopedia of the Academy Awards, and then every couple of years we'd have to go get a new volume to like, because we didn't have those. You know, a couple years.
It's amazing.
So this, but this is the first movie I think I really, because this is one of the first movies where they really went after like big, big names for an animated voice cast. I mean, really, it was kind
Christian
of
like Slater.
Billy Joel in Oliver and Company. And then from there, you just see like bigger names and bigger names and bigger names until we get to Lion King, which we just talked about in our first Disney episode, where it was like the entire cast was an A-list actor, you know? And that was all because of Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was at the time the head of Disney. And he tried multiple times to interfere and sabotage this movie, to sabotage Ferngully. He was pissed off that Robin Williams. Yes.
Wait, I didn't know this.
To the point that at one point they had to move, he got them moved out of the studio they were recording in, and they were finishing up some of their recordings in a brewer, like in an old brewery, and he tried to have Disney, like he tried to buy this old brewery for Disney just so they could, he could kick them out again.
Why was he so anti this movie?
He didn't want Robin Williams to be in two movies that year because they came out in the same year.
Oh, because Aladdin.
He did not want Robin Williams. Yep, because Aladdin came out. And I think he was maybe a little threatened because this was going to be one of the first big, like, it was an animated movie that wasn't Disney, but that was getting a lot of attention
right.
since Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast. And I think it sounded like he felt pretty threatened by that. It ended up not doing anywhere near the box office of anything Disney has ever done. And apparently he did call the producer, Wayne Young, or whatever his name is, and say, it was fantastic. I loved it. I don't know if he apologized for trying to sabotage them multiple times.
Right.
But he did call and say that he loved the film. He thought it was fantastic. And he has been on the record, like, more recently when he's been asked about, like, why did you try to sabotage Fern Gully? Like, he's been like, I don't know. You know, I was dumb and I think it's a great movie. This is what sparked Robin Williams dropping out of voicing the genie in the second Aladdin movie.
Oh.
Because he was very upset that Katzenberg would try to interfere with him working on a film that meant so much to him personally, because the entire voice cast took reduced rates because they all believed so much in the environmental message of Fern Gully. So Robin was like, I don't see what the problem is. And if this is a movie that means something to me personally, because this is a message that I think needs to be, you know, put out there, then I'm going to do it. And so he dropped out of the second Aladdin movie. I think he did come back for the third, but he was not in the second one.
Oh, wow.
They had a bit of a Disney Robin Williams
battle
feud for a couple of years there.
I mean, he was in a lot there for a second.
Yeah. So that's interesting, so little story there.
I think what's so interesting about this, like, compared to the Disney movies of that time, I mean, it's not princesses. I mean, Fern Gully is a fairy and you do have, like, that, you know,
magical-ish.
Why did I
think she was a princess?
Because everything was princesses.
In my head,
I
was like, oh, she's a princess.
Well, yeah, because everything was princess.
She was
time.
A princess.
I thought there was, like, something special about her, too, because I was watching. I mean, when I watched it, I was like, I don't think she's special at all. She's just really good friends with Maggie or whatever. Mm-hmm. that's it.
Yeah, she's like her little prodigy. Yeah, she's her little friend.
She's and nice
her dad,
to senior
though,
citizens.
I couldn't tell in the moment when she talks about her dad, because her dad's there, and he's, like, an older fairy.
Yeah.
But I don't. He doesn't say he's a king or he's not
no.
like
you no, know. But it barely feels, in it.
It makes sense that yeah. you. It makes sense that we all made that connection of, Ferngully right. or Krista's clearly a princess because her dad's there. This older like, and it makes sense actually. You know, I'm sure that this had some relevance when they were doing it. Little Mermaid had just come out. It was super successful. Krista mm-hmm. very much has. Mm-hmm. You have the human who comes in. Krista's kind of the oddball who goes to find mm-hmm. them.
Yep.
You very much have like the vibes of Little Mermaid in that you have, I mean, I would even venture
Humans
to say that Hexus has a little bit of the Ursula feel and like how he like oozes and moves. Mm-hmm. And then you
when
have
he comes
the
out,
dad.
When he comes out of the truck, he does like an Ursula move.
Yeah.
So I had the same thought.
Huge.
Yeah.
Which
and
that
then
is
the dad
such
who's
a terrifying
like,
visual when he's like
so
skull
totally.
And yes. Speaking of
Hexus is scary.
Disney and bringing us to my next topic, I caught two more. So there's already been a massive discussion online about how this movie, about how Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar, is basically Fern Gully.
Yeah.
Like going so far as for people, it's like people online calling it flat out plagiarism. Because the main plot and themes are like it's just line up
so
completely.
Similar.
I have not seen Avatar.
No, me
I'm
neither.
Sorry.
I've seen parts of it, but I have
Did
not
you see
seen
me
the
neither?
Whole thing.
I'm more surprised that Jessica has not seen it though.
This shouldn't be surprising because as Jessica knows, like this has come up on this podcast multiple times. I until recently the only movies I really watch are the ones that Jessica makes me watch. Like, I'm so much more of a TV person. So this is not like there was one episode that Adam Paul.
I cannot get myself to sit down and watch 3 hours of Avatar, but I've seen all like 100 hours of Avatar: The Last Airbender multiple times.
Well, same.
So yeah, it's like.
Well, same. But I knew this about you, Melanie. I knew this but kind of surprises me that Jessica hasn't seen Avatar.
It surprises me as well. But it's just kind of one of those things. It's like it went on long enough. I was like, oh, I'm not going to change it now, I guess.
So Sarah, there's one of the three of us who has seen Avatar.
Avatar?
Do you see?
Uh-oh, now I'm going to have to be an Avatar expert. Uh-oh.
No, but I'm like, you know, from what you remember of the movie, like, do you see that? Like,
I'm so scared that people are going to come, come for me now.
Well, no, it's funny because before you, I know they are going to come for you. Before Jessica brought it up, like, and before I saw it also on like all of the online conversations, I had the same thought too. Because when I rewatched it, I mean, but it's all very similar themes on like Pocahontas. Like all of these movies have like a similar kind of colonialization type of theme.
Yeah.
But it's like they're all are similar but different. But I feel the Avatar very much because it is like a beautiful green, like tropical, magical, untouched place that does not have like machines and, you know, all of the technology and stuff like that. So I do see that. But I haven't gone through to like look at all the themes. So
yeah.
I don't know.
I had two more recent movies kind of come up to me, especially in the end. Moana, when he comes out and he is the tar covered skull and he has like flames coming out of him and stuff, and she takes the seed and just goes right in. I'm like, this is literally the end of Moana. Like the heart of Tafiti is basically like the seed of creation. And she goes right into the volcano, which is Tafiti, she figures out, and like goes right in there, and then everything turns all green, and like the flowers are popping up kind of the same way as when she's...
And again, it's like nature was out of balance. You know what I mean? It's like that's it's the same idea. Yeah. What is her name? Tafiti? Is it Tafiti?
Tafiti, uh-huh.
Tafiti, that it's basically the same concept as like it's just the world being out of balance because... Hexus is the destruction spirit. Mm-hmm. Like that's what he is. He's destruction incarnate, you know? And so it's kind of like, and when the world got him out of balance, he became into existence. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the Tafiti was just, she was totally out of balance. And so it's like, she just needed to get back in balance. It is kind of similar. Yeah. I didn't not think of Moana, but yeah.
As soon as he came out, when he comes back, because you think he's gone the first time.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and he's like this terrifying skeleton, which my first thought was, wow, I don't remember this. This is very terrifying. And then my second thought, when she like holds up the seed and is going to go in, I'm like, oh my God, this is like Moana. The other movie that it made me think of, only because they say the line and talk about the seeds so much when they like, they're talking about the seeds a bunch and then they are all saying, help it grow. But I don't know if any of you saw The Lorax.
No.
There is the whole... So this is the plot that's not from the book. Because the book of The Lorax just covers the actual, like, chopping down of the trees. And they're harvesting the fluff and stuff like that. But there's this whole side plot line that was written just for the movie. Where there are no trees left. And this boy... who is voiced by Zac Efron, I believe, is trying to impress a girl, Taylor Swift. We can just use this as a clip on Instagram and get the Swifties to come. We talk about Taylor Swift doing, I think, her first voice role. And she wants to see trees. So he's going all over the place looking for just one seed of the trees. And then he finds it and they like go all through town trying to find a place to plant it. And they sing a whole song called Let It Grow. And so I just had this whole imagery. I was like, oh yeah, like they're running around with one seed and to defeat Hexus, and they're all saying like, help it grow, help it grow. And even the music sounded a little similar. It wasn't definitely not like the full blown song like it was in the Lorax, but the Lorax is really good and I recommend it.
I want to watch it.
Yeah. Definitely one of those movies that suffered from people not wanting to be hit over the head with,
yeah,
you know, climate the message of don't cut down all the trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I thought it was great.
I mean, I'm here for the message.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me too. I'm here for that message.
If you want that message, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. We were just talking about Joni Mitchell too. And that's like one of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
So there you go.
One of the things that also really struck me about this movie was the animation style, because it is like, obviously there are, you know, looking at Little Mermaid, there very much are things that you're like, okay, clearly this was influenced by Little Mermaid, but I'm looking at the characters and way the characters are drawn, and the 20th century animated film that I am most familiar with and I have like a ton of knowledge of was Anastasia. And looking at the way that these characters are drawn and just, you know, Batty being a bat.
Bat, yeah.
I mean, Krista and Anya don't have the same look exactly. They're different. But like Magi and the grandmother in Anastasia are drawn very similarly too. And they're very similar characters. And that just like really struck me that it's such a distinct animation style. And Anastasia didn't come out, I mean, I know animated movies take forever to produce because they're so detailed, but it didn't come out until 1997, so 5 years after this, and it was just really very clearly different than the Disney, like similar and different.
Yeah. No, I did like Anastasia as well, but I see what you're saying about the overall look of the animation. It's different than like, I mean, it's similar to Little Mermaid. I see what you're saying, but I feel like it's different. Yeah. It feels different to me.
It does. I think what I think the Little Mermaid references more go to what we were talking about earlier for me of like, okay, it's a girl and a human and in this case, the human becomes a part of her world. So that's different. But you have like, even the like,
right.
Hexus has Ursula-ish things, and like to the point of like why we all thought she was a princess. I still think we all thought she was a princess because Little Mermaid had just come out. We have that guy who seems to be like a very central elder figure in the fairies. And you have the daughter who's like a little, she goes out, she does her own thing. She's not part of the same group in the same way. Like people kind of tease about her a little bit. I mean, not as much as Ariel, but like, you know, she finds this human and
She just seems like she's very much put forward like a special character. Like,
yes.
And so I think, we just assumed because of Little Mermaid and then like all the Disney cartoons from back in the 40s and 50s where it was all the princesses too. It's like, I think you just assume like, oh, well, we're paying attention to her because she's special. And then she's special because she's a princess.
Right.
She's more of a warrior though.
Going to be a princess.
You know what I mean? Like, she's really not like, she saves the forest. Like, it's pretty cool. She's not an actual princess. She's just someone who's interested in learning like the magic of the forest. So she's really just like, a warrior. Warrior fairy.
Really badass.
I realized like while we were chatting before this, I did not pick a worst line.
I had a hard time with the worst line. I picked some best lines, but I had a hard time with the worst line.
I have a lot of best lines, but the worst line, it was just kind of, there was nothing that really stood out to me. There was a lot of dialogue that I felt was just kind of like bland.
See, but that I think that happens
in, you know, a kid's movie where you just kind of have to move things forward. And, you know, there just wasn't anything where I was like, oh, that's bad, that's like so bad, or oh, that's really not what anyone would say. Like, I don't know, nothing really jumped out at me
different from Disney. And I think partially why, to your point earlier, Jess, about like why parents, you know, this one I think parents could take their kids to because of the message and be perfectly fine with it. But I think one of the reasons why Disney was so successful with those, you know, with the movies in the early 90s is because you have, like, there's a lot of humor and a lot of, like, things kind of woven in for the adults that make the scripts really mm-hmm. interesting that aren't just mm-hmm. for kids. And this definitely, I like, right. when I was watching mm-hmm. it last week, I was definitely like, okay, this is a kid's movie. Like, it, like, the themes yeah. are profound. There's yeah. like, the themes are profound. I'm learning something, but it is not written that adults are going to be necessarily entertained in the same way that you do have in those Disney movies of that era. And so I definitely think the script was, it was fine. It was, it did what it needed to do for this movie, but it wasn't like,
which is interesting that you say that though, because like Robin, there are so many of Batty's lines that like I never yeah. caught as a kid.
Right. And
I was going to say that.
How much of that was Robin Batty, though? Yeah. How much of that was like other than oh, Batty,
all of it. He all of it. Other than Batty, all of it.
You guys, he provided.
Other than Batty. Okay, you're right.
14 hours of improvised material. Wow. The role was originally supposed to have about 8 minutes of screen time. Once he started recording, the producer was like, oh no, this guy needs to be in at least half the movie. Mm-hmm. So then he became like the best friend, and yeah, 14 hours of improvised material. Wow. That's crazy.
Okay, so yes.
I'm surprised, but not that surprised.
No, yeah. I mean, wow. I wonder okay, how much he did for Aladdin then, because Aladdin, yeah. like the vocal work, the jokes he has in Aladdin are better than this one. But he totally. Has some stuff in this where I'm like, even the vocabulary that he's using is like, you know, just stuff that kids would never understand at all.
Okay.
It's like, so who is this for? So that's for the right, adults.
Other than Robin
himself.
Williams, though.
He did it for himself.
Robin Williams, I mean.
Yeah, you're right. Other than Robin Williams, the lines are not gonna like hit home in any way. I mean, there's some special like messaging
absolutely
in the there's lines, some beautiful but messaging. There's but the yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I actually did have a worse line. If we're gonna get into okay. the script right now,
let's go. Let's go.
I need to hear it.
It's when they're trying to find Krista, and some of the fairies, they're like, I don't remember what was the line that set it up, which I probably should have. Somebody says something about she's going to have somebody for dinner or something like that was the setup line. And then one of the, like the guys in the fairy group goes, or she's someone else's dinner. And I was like, we don't need that. We don't need to like assume she's yep. dead. And like, I know.
Yeah, there's a lot of violence in this movie.
You know, and I was like, we don't need that. We don't need that. And so this is a terrible, this is a terrible explanation of this. And Jessica, please put the clip in because, like, I don't. As I said, I don't remember what set
it
up.
If I can find it,
if you can find it. But I just something about that line. I'm like, we don't need to like. I mean, I guess maybe we do. Like, a lot of times, it's like, oh, the heroine might be dead. But just something about the way it was like brushed off as like such a joke, and it was like, ha ha ha, maybe she's dead.
And I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell if it was like a forest, like just because it's the nature of the forest, maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Although, like, wait, there's that lizard that is mm-hmm. Tone Lock or whatever. Like
Tone Lock. Welcome to the food
chain. She
gonna eat you.
She convinces him not to eat someone. So I can't believe that. Like, I just can't believe that the fairies are getting eaten by animals. Because I think the fairies could just be like, "Hey, no, no, no. We're all friends. Don't eat me."
And she okay. talked to the frog, too. She yeah. talked to the frog. So she another talks to the thing. Animals.
There's these
so,
yeah, giant you're totally reptiles right. everywhere that are not that don't pay any attention to the fairies. It's like that huge yellow anaconda is just like, oh, hey, it's Krista. What's up? Like, no, they're not getting eaten by animals. That was unnecessary.
I agree. I like this. I actually thought about this line too, but I was like, It's, I mean, I do agree though. If you had to pick a worst,
it, honestly,
if you had to pick a worst, I was like, no. Another thing that bumped me, and this is not a line, this is like a detail that I was like, pause, please. When you you see Zach's wallet, you see his ID. It says he's from Australia. I'm sorry, he has no Australian accent.
The movie is supposed to take place in Australia. I did read.
Well, and it's like the production was half.
Yeah, it's
a
half. Like, yes, you're correct. Yeah, like, it's half American, half Australian. But then, why didn't they just have him be Australian?
Right.
And then the fairies don't need an accent, but he could be Australian.
No, and I'm fine with the construction workers being from New York, but like. He, mm-hmm. You see that his thing says Australia,
right.
And there's no accent to be had at all.
Because they're even talking about like, oh, you know, the kid takes the summer job here. Why did he take this job or whatever? Like, just have him be from the United States. And sure, I'll buy that back in the 90s, you could take a summer job logging in Australia for and make more money than you did flying back and forth. Sure.
I guess so.
I'm sure. You could tell me anything about like what things cost in like the 80s and 90s nowadays, and I will believe you.
Yeah, fair.
If you're like, this was this cheap. I mean, I remember some of it. I don't remember what plane tickets to Australia cost, but because I didn't fly to Australia in the 90s. And even if I did, I didn't buy the tickets. So.
No.
But yeah, like, why just have him be, or just don't show it. Just have it be like, you know, just scrawl that we don't need to read. Like, just be symbols. And you, because she's looking at it, so she can't even read it.
She can't read.
It would look ridiculous to her. It would look like nothing.
But she saw him with his doggies, and that was cute.
That was cute. Yeah, because when the pictures came out, like the old-fashioned pictures, I was like, he's like a kid. What does he have pictures of? Like, you know, like one with his mom and his dad, maybe. But who else does he – he doesn't have kids, which is what those were normally for.
I just love the nostalgia, though, of the wallet, all the pictures coming out. I was like,
there were
pretty
much everything that she, like, takes off of him. I'm like, kids would not understand this at all now.
The Walkman? Mm-hmm.
The Walkman, the pocket knife, the wallet with the pictures. Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of the Walkman, one of my favorite lines, and I believe this comes from the dad, is when they like bring the Walkman to the fairies and they like start playing it, and he's like, they're like, what is this? And he's like, it's music. And the dad says, I don't know what a recording is, but I know what music is, and that is not it. And I'm like,
not music.
Yes.
I would say I'm gonna cheat and say I think my worst line is just the music and the songs.
They're not good.
It's
that's
not
another big Disney difference. They're not Howard. They're not.
Yes. It's not that it's absolutely terrible.
No, they're sensible.
I think it just doesn't fit with the movie. And it's really not up to the standard of what people had come to expect after Oliver and Company and Little Mermaid. And then, like, you know, all the Disney before that. Yeah.
But what's so interesting is they had, like, individual artists do the songs.
Right,
it's not like a soundtrack. So it isn't composed by one person.
Right.
So it's, like, it feels a little chaotic because it kind of is.
And it feels, I think, like it's catering too much to, like, the music scene of the 90s.
Yep.
Instead of trying to make it this, like, cohesive part of the movie. Yep. You know, even some of the orchestration was, like, just a little too cheesy and a little too, like, da-da, you know. like synthesizer, like where it could have been like a little bit more, a little more seamless, a little more blended, a little more
like
mature,
cohesive.
Yeah. It just, it's not like I do love the little rap that that Tone Loc does. Like, I think that's so cute. And like, there are parts of Batty's rap, which are, it's just like, well, it's Robin Williams rapping. So like, okay. But it's also at the same time, it's like, why is there so much rap like not very good rap going on right now. Like I forgot there was so much like 90s hip hop going on in this movie because
there's a lot.
Why would there be?
I think there's,
but like, there is.
That's so interesting, Sarah, that you brought up that they weren't like, they were done by individual artists and not by like one like composer and lyricist, because it very much like is like, we're just going to have a song and not advance the story in any way, or not like it, like none of the songs did feel like they were, they kind of illuminate the characters a bit, but not even in the way that you're like, this is a character song or an I want song or a villain song. I mean, yeah, the Toxic Love is a villain song, but I also wrote like literally in my notes, I was like, well, that was something. Like it just,
short. It just,
exactly. They're all very
not
short.
Not to mention, talk about.
You have Tim Curry, let him sing for like 5 minutes. Jesus.
Like, yes, please. But also let's talk about questionable themes. The way that song starts is very weird.
Yes.
Very, very weird.
I do believe we are destined to be soulmates.
Hit me one time. Hit me twice. Oh.
Ah. Oh. He's like, yeah, are we soulmates? Like, soulmates. And I'm like, is he singing a love song to the leveler?
And like, he's like, I'm a little inside confused. It. He's like, he's like oozing inside
and it's
of
very,
it.
It's, there's a lot of innuendo. It's very strange. And it confused me because I remember same. Loving that because obviously huge Tim Curry fan. Yeah. That voice is like, I even watched like him recording it and just watching him. He's so chill. He's got like his hand in his pockets. I'm like, this guy. But he is so good. And but then I rewatching it, I was like,
it's uncomfortable.
What is this song about? Yeah. I'm confused.
And he's like, he's just like sucking on every part that he can suck on. If something's sticking out, he's like,
oh,
image. And it's like, image.
And he's like, he even does like the part of it to be just like, toxic. And I'm like,
is this a so to your point
you're
of
watching
like...
you're watching how pollution procreates apparently
Jess, of like trying to hit like popular music in the 90s, like they attempted apparently to do like a like slow jam in a really weird way.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of this thing for me where it was like, okay, if you're going to do it because you feel like you have to, then don't. Like, if you're going to do it because it makes sense for the story and you can do it in a way that doesn't take away from your big picture, if you can do it in a way that adds value, then do it. If you're gonna do it because Little Mermaid did it and we have to, or this is what people expect from Disney, so we're gonna put it in ours, then like, then don't, because it's not, it's going to come across that way.
I am glad that 20th Century did figure out music
they did
and continuity by the time that Anastasia came out, because those are some of my favorite animated songs ever.
I think that is the closest anyone has gotten to hey Disney, we can also do music.
Well, like how many times did we think
hey Disney,
Anastasia,
we can also do Disney
movie.
Like that movie is, we'll have to do Anastasia sometime because oh my god, like that song Once Upon a December is better than a lot of Disney songs.
Journey to the Past is one of my favorite songs.
And Journey to the Past is good too.
Or like If You Can Learn to Do It, and that's all I can sing legally. But no, we're not talking about Anastasia, but so I'm glad that they figured it out, because that
so back to when Hexus
delicious.
Makes love to the logging machine.
Okay, I have another
let's talk about this
story continuity question. Because I genuinely don't know what happened. Did Magi die? Was she sick? What?
She died.
Does she? Okay, how does she die?
Why? She gives her life.
She infuses all of her energy and power into making the tree to protect them.
How I took it is she separates her power and gives it to all the other fairies because they go from green to blue.
Because
she says, I literally wrote this line down. I'm not going to lie.
That's what the colors are about.
Yes. Oh. She says, we all have a power and it grows when it is shared.
Why is everyone else green and Krista is blue? Because nothing about Krista is blue. Like, she's wearing hot pink. Her hair is kind of like purpley black. Her eyes are green. So shouldn't she also be green? Why is she blue? Yeah. Okay. So blue means you have powers.
I think it's like extra magic. Maggie says she literally says like we have a power and it grows when it is shared. So she like literally separates herself and everyone turns blue. And so she's like splitting her power to give them more power in order to like give it to the tree. I think. I don't know. That's just how I interpreted it.
No, I love that. I think that's good. I was like, I don't understand why she's dying. Like that was what like
why'd she die?
Why did she die? I did not understand.
Because it's a fantasy and she's the mentor. And she's gotta die.
And I think right. And I think what like when it signals is when she goes like pale.
Yeah, when she turns
shows
from,
her
like,
taking out like all her magic. I think.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think you're right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which
no,
I have
like
to
that.
Say I was obsessed with her dress. And still am. We had Ferngully coloring books, Melissa and I. And I remember when my cousin Rachel was born. We went and like spent the day with my aunt and my cousin when she was this little newborn. And like we had, and I think we even got a Ferngully coloring book for my older cousin, Rachel's older sister. And they're like, I remember that Melissa colored a picture of Maggie in my coloring book on accident. And I freaked because there was just something about like the gradient of like the dress that was very soothing to me even then. And I would like a Ferngully coloring book now because, man.
She basically looks like she's in a big flower.
Yeah, she's
it's like
a flower.
The petals and it's kind of ombre. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful.
I loved the stepping ombre of it.
Good news. You can get a Ferngully coloring book still.
For like $50.
No, it
I know
is on
for your birthday.
You can get one on Pango Books for $2. It is pre-owned though, so it might be colored in already.
What? See, this is what I have a problem with when somebody else colors in my book.
I know, clearly. So maybe
this is one of these like core memories that like I just remember like being in like laying on the floor of the hospital room. My aunt's like mom and baby suite and like not talking to Melissa because she had accidentally colored in my book, just being like, no, I'm like, you gotta wait it out, I need some time before I forgive you for this.
You crossed the line,
unforgivable
sis.
mistake.
Okay, so what both of you said you had a lot of best lines, and I definitely had several.
Did Sarah do her worst line?
I don't really have. I didn't have one.
I'm saving
but
Sarah-
I did say though the toxic love thing it kind of irked me a little bit. I was like, it was cringy. Sorry, Melanie. Best line.
I was gonna say like both of you had. I'm curious to know whether you chose. Whether you went like funny with it or whether you went like more profound, because I think there are a lot of different ways you could go. Like, as you said, Robin Williams had some like killer bits in this.
Yeah, he did.
So. Hence the problem. That was exactly my problem, Melanie, is
I thought I was going to end up going with one of the funny lines and then Because in the beginning, I felt it was all a little too on the nose. It was maybe even a little overwritten, but I was like, you know, they're fairies. Mm-hmm. This is obviously very blatantly nature, nature, nature. Great. But then, and so I was like, it's going to end up being one of the funny ones that wasn't even written. He just made it up. And then the end kicked in, and I even messaged Melanie, and I'm like, I'm holding back tears at the end of this freaking movie. And so there were definitely a lot of, like, the more profound lines in the end that that were a little more, I think, written a little better than, like, some of the stuff in the beginning, I think, was a little too on the nose.
Sarah, you were saying that you were having a challenge deciding between the two?
Yeah, I mean, between just, like, the funny line or, like, the meaningful lines. Also, like, lines that I liked as a kid versus now, some that I didn't even notice as a kid.
Yeah. Okay, what were some of the ones that you...
I just wrote a bunch down.
What were some of the ones that you liked as a kid versus now?
As a kid, I mean, I was so... I'm such a nerd now. I'm obsessed with fairies, and I swear it's because of this movie. And it was the more, like... Not the help it grow, but can't you feel its pain? Like that type of thing. Like when she put her hand on the tree after he carved into it.
Why did she carve into it?
Because humans.
But she had spent the whole day that they were together the day before. She was like talking to him about the trees. And this is terrible. Don't cut down the trees. And then he wakes up and is like, yeah, I'm going to stab this tree.
Because he's a human and he still doesn't get it. He still doesn't get it even after that. There's like more that he does after that. So he's just not quite getting it. But when she's like, you mustn't. And she puts his hand on the tree and says, can't you feel its pain? Like as a kid, like I still feel like I can't hurt plants now because I'm like, I'm going to hurt my plant. It has pain.
I'm so sorry.
So as a kid, I think like those kinds of lines were more impactful. However, rewatching it and hearing all of Robin Williams' lines, I'm like, this guy, I can't. So the part that I just find to be so funny is when Krista is trying to change him back after shrinking him.
Oh my God.
And and he goes into all the different shapes, right?
So
he gets like, yeah, an elephant, a duck. But then at the end, when he's all the different shapes, he goes, it's Darwin's grab bag.
I miss that.
So good.
So,
I was like, the first time I got it.
I never even heard that line as a kid. But watching it, I was like, that's hilarious.
Yes. That was.
And you know it was improv. For sure.
Absolutely.
He just made that up.
Yeah, there's no way that was.
Oh, so that one killed me.
I love, we used to always do like when he hits the tree and falls down and he's like, I'm blind. I can see. It's a miracle. Like we would do that all the time.
I feel like we did that together as kids.
I think as a kid, I really liked, gravity works.
Gravity works.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. That one was really funny.
I think my favorite one, and this was probably my biggest contender for best line before I ended up choosing what I chose, because there is sort of like this profound message to it, but it's packaged into just this absolutely hysterical thing when they're like, the humans are here, like the humans are coming back to the forest, and he's like, oh, there goes the neighborhood.
First thing, all these trees go, then come your highways, then come your shopping malls and your parking lots and your convenience stores, and then come price check on prune juice, Bob. Price check on prune juice.
Love price check on humans.
I also wrote this. Price prune check juice. On prune juice, yes. Bob. And then they go.
Price check on prune juice.
And then Zach and the dad look at each other and go. And they shrug.
Yeah.
However, I have to tell you, I have a huge problem with this line.
Okay.
Not that I have a huge problem. Actually, I don't have a huge problem with this line. I like this line because I think that it shows... I was almost frustrated because I get Batty. Obviously, he's like been manipulated by the humans. He's afraid of the humans. Chris is not listening to him, by the way.
Right.
She listens to other people about the humans being scary. Yeah. And I'm like, just listen to Batty. He clearly knows what's going on. And so Batty starts to say, like, hey, but if the humans come, like, there goes our trees, there goes this, there goes, and like, you're gonna build your parking lots. And Zach doesn't want to deal with it, so he just changes the channel.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, if that isn't interesting.
Yeah.
Another one of
Zach. Zach Young, by the way. Zach Young. That's his name on his driver's license. Isn't that from Desperate Housewives?
Yes.
Isn't that his name in Desperate Housewives? The crazy teenager?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember.
Oh, that's hysterical.
We both caught something from his freaking driver's license.
I know.
This is we're both like way too. This is what's happened to us. We're analyzing these movies.
This is what's happened to us.
You're like Australia. I'm like Desperate Housewives.
Well, and that says a lot about both of us right there too. I also loved the "Am I dead? We can fix that for you." Like when he thinks he, when Zach, right when he gets, yes. We can fix that for you.
Yes. Or the tail, like the,
it's a good threat.
The human, she's like saying, she keeps saying the tales about the humans and then like the human tails. And he's like, human tails, humans don't have tails. They have big, big bottoms that they wear with bad shorts. And they walk around going, hi, Helen.
Hi, Helen. That line got me too, because I kind of remember that line as a kid, but seeing that one now. Yeah, that one got me really hard too. Oh, that was funny. I think I wrote that one down too because I thought it was hilarious.
And when he's trying to scare Zach, he's like, puff up. They hate that. I like never caught that when I was a kid. But now, you know, like all this stuff that they tell you to do, like when there's an animal around, like that. I don't know if any of it's true, but I just love that. He's like, puff up.
What did you end up choosing for your best lines then? If none of these were your were best line in the movie, Sarah, what did you end up choosing?
For me? Okay. I think this is my favorite line. So it's kind of along the same lines after there, I think when Zach just comes up and Batty just says the pants thing, something about the shorts. And Batty says, oh no, I'm sorry. She's like, can't you feel its pain? I think it's during this part. And Batty says, humans can't feel anything. They're numb from the brain down.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm like, I think that's my favorite line of this movie.
Yeah. That was on my list too, for sure. I ended up going with like the super obvious, super, super profound. And it's two lines.
You pulled a Melanie.
Yeah. It's two lines. Yeah, totally, Melanie. It's like a bookend and everything. It's a two-parter. And there was good stuff in between. But I just liked the beginning and the end. And we already talked about part of it. We talked about all of it, actually. I do like when she says, all the magic of creation exists within a single tiny seed.
Love that.
Yeah. And then I could not find... And I didn't write it down because I thought I would be able to find it, but I could not find what she says in between. But then what Maggie ends with is, we all have the power and it grows when it is shared.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the point of the movie right there.
And that was on my, that was 100%.
Yeah.
To me, that is probably, I think there's a lot of reasons why that is probably the best line in the movie, because that's the point of the movie. It's not what I chose. So you very much did a Melanie and encapsulated the movie, Jessica.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I did it because I knew you weren't going to. I didn't, but. No. We'll pretend so I did.
I chose a line around the end too. And I believe Batty says this. It's when Zach decides that he's not going to stay and he's going to go back because he wants to like teach people about like not clear cutting the forests and everything. And I believe Batty says this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the line is, truth doesn't always win friends, but it certainly influences people. And I thought such a great line, because I don't think it like necessarily encapsulates the movie or like sums it up anyway, but I think the line is so good because, especially like, you know, we're talking about now and going back to what we were saying when we started this episode about like how people might bristle more at this movie because they don't want to hear the truth or like be lectured to. I mean, no, it influences people, but you might not be liked if you say what's true and what's real, especially mm-hmm. when it's something that like doesn't work for capitalism or, you know, doesn't do what people mm-hmm. want it to be doing. And I thought that was just such a profound line and really relevant.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote that line down too, because mm-hmm. I also found it so profound for Batty.
For Batty,
like,
yeah.
Like, Batty's really, like, he's got it. He's Batty, but he's got it together. Like, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, he cracks me up because he says, he did. No, you're totally right. But he cracks up. He goes, "You're not half bad for a hominid." After that, and then of course it has to like character break a little or make it a little kind of funny. But I wrote that line too because it's super profound.
Yeah, that's actually like I had three in a row because mm-hmm. I had the yours, which was humans can't feel anything, they're numb from the brain down. Then there goes the neighborhood. Price check on produce, Rob. Price check on produce, and then like almost right after that is. Truth doesn't always win friends, but it certainly influences people. He was just on a roll, and Batty was just knocking it out there.
Totally on a roll. I know.
But yeah, like, I honestly don't know what this movie would have been without Robin Williams.
No.
I don't honestly think it would have. Don't know. Mm-mm. What was in the place in the script of the parts where then it ended up becoming about Bat, like where they kicked those lines and those messages to Batty, because he wasn't mm-hmm. supposed to be in it that much. He was only, I think it was only supposed to be like the scene where she finds him and they go to the mountain, and then he wasn't really supposed mm-hmm. to be in the rest of it. So what was all that, like Pips? Was, you know, I don't know.
Interesting.
I mean, Cheech and Chong are in it.
Cheech and they Chong could have
some more Cheech and Chong.
Yeah. Cheech and Chong are in it. That is true.
He is the main source of entertainment, yeah. Robin Williams, in the yeah. movie. Absolutely.
And all of the voice work in this movie is amazing. Like, it mm-hmm. it still surprises me to this day that Samantha Mathis did not do more voice work, because she has a very good voice for it.
So good.
I am so glad that you chose this movie, Sarah, because I would not have watched it. Like, I would never have thought to watch Fern Gully in a million years had Jessica not been like, Sarah wants to do Fern Gully. I'm like, okay. But I really enjoyed revisiting it. It was, I mean, it's cute. It has a great message. It was fun to like look back at like that time in animation, and that wasn't Disney.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say that, particularly not Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of that time in animation, I mean, we're recording soon Beauty and the Beast, which is right, you know, that time in animation, but it's Disney. Yeah. And so it was really fun to go back and watch this. And, like, very timely, very relevant. It is a very relevant movie with a very relevant message.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's why when I rewatched it, I was like, I love this movie, because I loved it as a kid. Yeah. But then when I rewatched it, I'm like, okay, this is actually pretty relevant. This messaging is actually like it hit home really hard, even watching it today.
Well, and it sucks being the fucking dumbass humans who still don't get it after 33 years. Like, that's the part of it that like. That hurts, you know, because it's like, I listened to all these messages that were coming at me when I was a kid, and I'm mm-hmm. trying to share the power with people, but like, as a whole, we're not getting it. And it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't seem to matter how the message gets put out. It's just not sitting with, I don't know what, you know, a decent enough portion of the human population that would make a difference, right? It's like what Magi was saying, like we have to share, everyone has to share. We all have to buy into this. We all have to do something, whatever you can do. And that's the whole thing too, is like when it boils down to it, yes, we all need to do something, and we're all going to have to work together. But actually, it really is, there's just like one hexus. There's like, you know, there's not one hexus. There's like 100 hexuses amongst 8 billion people. And they're doing 70% of the damage. And we are too busy, like, bickering amongst ourselves to organize and share our power as 8 billion people to be like, you 100 hexuses, knock it off. Please. Or we will shove a seed in your chest. Turn you into a tree.
No, you're totally right. And I think, too, it's part of the problem. Actually, what Magi kind of says is, like, we do all have the power, but you have to look inward. And that's the biggest problem is we don't look inward. We're looking to the like our external problems and not like, oh, wait, we're the actual problem.
Right.
So if we can fix ourselves and fix our processes and fix everything, like we – and like you said, work together. But we have to – and not just personally, but as a people, like we have to look inside. And that's not easy for a lot of people.
Right. I think a lot of people do think that, like, and a lot of people do make, like, very surface level changes. But yeah, like what we see with Zach is, like, Zach loves the shopping malls. I'm sure Zach eats all his meals from the convenience store. So if somebody is saying, like, take away the highways, take away the shopping malls, take away my 7-Eleven, like, I don't want to hear it because this is how I live my life. So there is this, like, very substantial thing. Like, you will hit a wall if you are not ready to examine, like, why do I feel like I need this, whatever it is, you know? Something that you know maybe you should change, but you feel this attachment to it. And then a lot of people just stop there. You know, a lot of people, it's just kind of like, well, that's that. And I can't change this thing.
Well, it's more systematic.
And then it's very easy to feel very defeated about that and just be like, well, I can't change this big thing. I can't change how I commute or whatever like that. I can't change how much of this, you know, disposable thing I use. I can't change this. So it's very easy to just feel like now I can't change anything, but but maybe it's so much more like nuanced than that. I feel like there are other things you can change, like just take ownership of what you do have control over and what you do feel like you can change. Or if it's something that is a big deal, like why do you need the shopping mall? You know, and we found a lot of people don't. They're dying. They're dead in a lot of places. So that is something that, like, a lot of people have done the work on. Like, I don't need the mall.
Yeah, but then it's replaced by shipping and all those other things too. So
exactly.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So, I mean, because, But then, like, there's only so much we can do individually unless there's, like, systematic change. Mm-hmm. Like, but then they put so much pressure on you as an individual. As an individual.
Everything is so hyper-individualistic. Yeah.
But that's the whole point is it's like, well, no, we have to change it systematically in order to actually make any changes. So that's what I mean in Zach is just our human. So like we're gonna put it all on him as a person, but he's just like representing the human race, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. This was a absolute delight. If people want to find out more about what you are doing, your music, where can they go?
Yeah, just on socials. I'm just at Sarah Joelle, SarahJoelle. And I just have a lot of music going on right now. I have my real wedding planning business as well. So I'm always doing that, but I'm still trying to play a lot of music. We're playing a lot of music this summer. My wife and I have a band together. So we'll be playing some music. You could just go check me out on all the socials.
Awesome. Jess, where can people find you?
Mostly on Instagram right now at Jessica Benoist Young. I am going to, we're speaking environmentally. I am going to, some point in the very near future, be starting some sort of serialized fiction about the birds in my backyard. If you have been following me for Yes. For a long time, I don't know when this first started, like six or seven years ago, I started writing tweets about the bird drama in my backyard. And I have always wanted to actually write it out. So that will be coming very soon. I'm not quite sure how it's going to be delivered, but just follow me on Instagram and there will be information. Yes. So Jessica Benoist Jung, all one word, no hyphens, no periods.
And you can find me at melanie.r.reef on Instagram. You can follow the show at Best Line, Worst Line. Find the show, subscribe, download, like, rate and review anywhere you get your podcasts. And also join us on Patreon.
Yes.
We have a Patreon going on. There are some fun bonus episodes and bonus content you can get over there. So we'd love to see you over there. And we'll see you next time.
You sure?
I'm positive.
Only fools are positive.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
I fell for it. I fell.